John, by the way, you're a great interviewer. I'm just like loving your questions here. It's like, hey, let's talk some more.
Oh, good. I'm gonna cut that part out and I'm gonna keep repeating it. He said that was a great interview.
For human resources professionals who walk the fine line between providing strategic support and grabbing a baseball bat, welcome to HR Hardball, hosted by John Reeves Whitaker. This is your leadership moment, folks. Don't screw it up.
Oh man, we have a treat for you today. Episode 6, talking today with Dr. Pillay. He is a best-selling author and educator who partners with leaders, teams, and individuals to achieve high performance through the science of happiness. And who amongst us couldn't use some more of that? Now, he's got an interesting backstory. He was actually born in Nigeria during the Civil War back in the 60s, late 60s. He's experienced very humble beginnings and really illustrates the American dream now. He's got a very unique journey. It's taught him what truly drives success. And it's not who or what we are, it's how well we leverage happiness and harmony, the music of our lives. So today, Dr. Pillay artfully combines his passions for music and education to help people close the gap between potential and performance. If you want to read more about Dr. Pillay, you can find him at www.drpillay.com. That's D-R-P-E-L-E. So we're on, we're recording. I am here with Dr. Pillay. And Dr. Pillay, we're a couple Texans actually right now. I know that you're in Austin. I'm up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but welcome and thank you for joining me today.
I appreciate joining you here today, John. Thank you.
You know, we just became connected over LinkedIn and you post quite a bit of interesting articles and whatnot, but you have such an interesting story. It's immediately captivating, you know, I don't want to rehash your whole story, but you are, this is going to sound cliche, but you are the American dream.
Thank you.
I mean, can you give us like the quick, elevator speech of how Dr. Pillay became Dr. Pillay and where you are now from where you started?
Yeah, I appreciate that, John. Well, first of all, I live now in Austin, Texas with my wife and three kids, and, we moved here from Minnesota, I've lived for at least 35 or plus years. So I think coming to Austin, they say you're not really an Austin person until you've been here for 20, 30 years. So I don't think I quite qualify, but we definitely love it here in Austin. And it's been a great journey. But, you know, back to your original question, before the 35 years I spent in Minnesota, I actually originally come from Nigeria, which is in West Africa. And for those who are old enough to remember, or even maybe students of history, you may know that there was a civil war in Nigeria in the 1960s.
Yes.
When I was, you know, just a young child, you know, in my maybe 2-3 years old. This was the first Rwanda before we all heard about, you know, death and destruction. This is the first time you'd see black and white pictures of little children with the big kwashiorkor stomachs and the flies buzzing around in their faces. That was my life. That was me. And we were afraid to die every day. We were jumping from refugee camp to refugee camp. And an interesting thing happened back then in my life. And I'll never forget it because it set the tone of my life. My mother would actually sing to me in lieu of giving me food because she didn't have any food to give me. We were afraid to die and we were hungry, but at least she could sing. And she would take my name. Yeah. She would take my name, Pillay, and insert it into the songs and make me happy. And so there I was, happy. And somehow the happiness drove away the hunger. And the happiness drove away the fear of dying every week. And we survived somehow. And that taught me my life's first lesson, which is this. You need to hold on tight to the thing that makes you happy. Because it's the happy that produces the success, not the other way around. So many people, you know, live lifetimes looking for success, saying, I'm going to be happy when? I'm going to be happy when? And it's like, no. Find your happy now, hold on to it, and let it propel you to your profit. And that's why my company is called Profitable Happiness, because I use music, which is one of my sources of happiness, and teaching, which is another one. And I've wrapped that into a business online where I'm creating happiness and success for other people. So that's my story. You know, I'm basically a musician guy who got a PhD and did all kinds of crazy things. But at the end of the day, I'm a teacher. And I love to help other people find their happiness and connect it to to business profit online.
We need more of that. I mean, I don't have to tell you right now. There's such a schism right now in the relationships between, I mean, people from whether it's politically or racially or culturally right now. And I think that, you know, there's so much tension overall right now. I think that we've gotten to a point where we're not focusing on the blessings we have. We're not focusing on the happiness we have. We're focusing on the differences and the stressors. And, you know, it creates anger. It creates resentment. It creates name calling and all the rest of it. It's just there's nothing good that comes out of it. When you know, your story too, I when I was reading back through it, I mean, this is not like a get rich quick and be happy scheme. I mean, a couple times you said, yeah, so you were happy and broke, which has been there a couple times myself. It's yeah. You know, there's nothing better than to, you know, owe no money to anybody because you have none. But you have you do find what's really important to you. And I got to tell you this too. You mentioned you're a musician. I checked out, I got a song of yours now that I'm going to start playing in the mornings. Your song, Thank You.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you checking that out. That's a great, one of my favorites, all time favorites.
It's such a good song. It's such a great, just reminder that thank you for, you know, the bird, the little birdie in the window. Thank you for the rainbow. Yes, thank you. I'll definitely include the links to all this stuff in the show notes as well. But how have you turned a good attitude into a business model?
Wow. Well, thank you. First of all, you just made my day with the whole reminding me of my song thing. See, I'm not used to that yet. You know, it's like you write a song and that's it. But then other people someone might like it.
It's a great song.
Yeah. Well, what I've basically done is, you know, I've lived the kind of lifetime I think so many of us have lived, which is, yes, there was something that got you up in the morning. There was something you loved when you were younger and you were just inherently happy. You at the instinct level, you were playing. Everything was great. And then someone said, you've got to go and become that.
Right.
Right. Or you got to fit into this box or something. And then all of a sudden you abandoned your play. You abandoned your happy and you went off, got your suit on and dressed up and went into the world and tried to make some money or something like that. That problem, the problem of abandoning the things that make us happy, is not mine alone. Everybody, I think most people I know have dealt with that. But what I did was I was so lucky that I failed woefully so many times that I ended up with nothing. And I was like, the only thing I really have left is me and my happiness. So I might as well hold on tight to it. For example, I remember being a vice president in a huge company, EDS, actually. They've since become, I think they were bought by HP. I was a vice, PTC first, then EDS, then a whole bunch of other companies. But I was a vice president, director at all these companies.
Huge company.
At EDS, I remember one day with my $100-something thousand salary, I went to work that one day and I sat down and saw an email that very succinctly said to me, you're fired.
Oh, geez.
Not in those exact two words, but you get my point.
Right, right.
In that instant, my sense of who I am, I'm a director of marketing or I'm a VP of this or that, was gone. My sense of income, I had a young child and a wife, and I couldn't do anything about mortgages anymore, was gone. And all of a sudden I realized, you know what? I gotta find a way to not be the title someone else gives me.
Yep.
To not be the money someone else just gives me just because I did okay at a 1 hour, you know, job interview somewhere.
Right.
And that's when I decided, you know what? I'm gonna find a way to figure this thing out, to turn what I love, the thing that makes me happy, into some kind of a business profit, because I felt that was my destiny. In fact, a lot of people, you know, like to say life is hard. I agree, life is hard. But for me, life is H-A-R-D, how adversity reveals destiny.
Oh, because we've been working on that one. There's a workshop.
because what happened to me in that instant was my hardship, right, revealed my destiny. And so I took my struggles and my lemon and I went off to make lemonade. And thank goodness that was right when the internet basically appeared. As they say, who was it who invented the internet? The vice president?
Al Gore.
Guy? Yeah. That was when Al Gore gave us the internet. Okay. And so all of a sudden I started to learn all these new technologies, these new ways of communicating. And I found to my joy that the internet is a place where if you can teach people things, if you can entertain people, if you can just help people without asking for anything in return, you can build something that's a business that is far more profitable than anything you ever did when you had a job. I didn't realize that was possible, but it actually is. Uh-huh. And so that's what I do today. You know, I help people use LinkedIn to find their ideal clients and build a structure that helps them become very successful doing what they love to do.
Hello, HR. If you're not using MC Data to help meet your hiring goals, you're working too hard. MC is a one-stop shop for labor market data, helping staffing firms and talent acquisition professionals find and recruit top-performing talent. Their user-friendly tools are packed with compensation and competition data, skills, demographics, and more, making it easy for you to make talent decisions in record time. To learn more about how MC can help your business meet its goals, visit economicmodeling.com. That's MC, E-M-S-I. I've used these guys several times in my past, and I will give them the definite thumbs up. Great people, great product. Get you some MC. Well, I know you do speaking as well, and I mean, you're a natural. You got me fired up right now. But, you know, you said life is hard, and it is, but, you know, it's better than the alternative. You know, it's like I've been in human resources for a long time, and I know that you spent some time in human resources as well. And sometimes
I was a vice president of HR at a healthcare facility.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm in healthcare as well. And, you know, a lot of times in HR, you have the unfortunate responsibility of giving people the news that they no longer have a job. And the range of emotions when that happens, first of all, it's never fun. But you do see on occasion the person who is just so sure that, well, this is just a door closing. I know there's going to be another one that opens. And you know from that moment that person is going to be fine. You know that because they did not identify themselves as, like you said, I'm the director of marketing, and now that I'm not, I have no self-value anymore, no worth. It truly is your attitude kind of determines where you go as opposed to the other. And I mean, you started off with that, the happiness and success, and not success then happiness. When you go and you speak to audiences, are you speaking to like corporate groups or are these open events, industry events?
Yeah, actually, I have two groups that I speak to. So my PhD was in organization and management. So basically leaders and teams. I speak to companies about how to improve their teamwork. In fact, I wrote a book, it's the one right behind me there, called The Seven Songs of a Successful Team. And I integrated music into how you build better teams. Yeah. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, so that's for leaders and for teams in corporate spaces. But the other group of people that I speak to are entrepreneurs, just like myself, who have the unique problem of wanting to take something that they're good at, that they love, and turn that into some kind of business profit. And that's where the concept of profitable happiness come from in both audiences. If you're in a team, we want to make employees happy because happiness produces profitable companies. And if you're an entrepreneur and an individual, we want to make sure that you can tap into your happiness because that's the best way to build your profitable happiness. So it's the same thing, but I have it in two different messages.
Well, you know, you are living what a lot of people want to live, which is, you know, you found your happiness, you found out what you like, and you know, music and your happiness. Now you're teaching others how to use that for success. It sounds so simple, but making that jump is such a tough transition because, you know, there are things that we're good at that make us happy. And 9 out of 10 times, those are not the things we're doing to make a living. We're doing something else that allows us to do the things that make us happy.
Yep.
And you've got 3 kids, you have a family. How do you make that jump and feel like, you know what, I'm going to be successful? How do you make that jump in your mind? Because I think you got to believe it yourself first.
Yeah, there's a you know, we get taught the wrong things in so many ways of our methods, in so many fields and areas of our lives. And one of the things we've been taught, all of us, is that you always have to start with how do things work? How do I do this? How do I do that? And the funny thing is that if you change your mindset, and I love the fact, John, that you said it's about the mind, but if you can change your mindset into not how is none of my business, but why? Why am I doing this or doing that? It changes your entire paradigm and it opens up new possibilities. So I would encourage anyone who's thinking about going back into doing what you love and bringing that to the fore, stop asking about how, because you're going to get stuck and you're going to give up.
Wow.
Instead, ask why. Why must I do this? Right? What is the purpose? And you'll find out that if you can really identify why you love this so much and why it's so important to you, and you can write that down, you can inspire yourself, then you've taken the first step toward being able to inspire other people. And then from that question, why, what is my purpose? Why am I doing this? You can build, okay, who am I doing this for? Right? Identifying your ideal target. And then from there, you go into, well, where are these people? Are they on LinkedIn? You know, which is where my B2B audience is. Are they on YouTube? Are they on Facebook? Where are they? Okay. And then you can say, what do I offer them? And once you get to what do you offer them, you have to understand, when are they in the life cycle of their marketing thinking? Are they ready to buy? Are they not so ready to buy? Are these people I have to wait, you know, 10 months for? You know, when are they and how much they know and how ready are they? Because that determines how I speak to them. And then finally, you say, how do I serve them? And how do I deliver my unique product in the marketplace? So you can see those several questions are really one of the tools I use for emerging entrepreneurs, people who are beginning to think about this question, because it really changes the game when you start thinking about how you're going to be successful and start thinking about why.
That's a great mind shift. Yeah, you're right, because we do. And a lot of times, let's look at podcasts. I just started podcasting. I'm not sure how long you've been doing it, but a lot of times people are so worried about the technical piece and if it's going to be perfect and the editing and the music, and they don't do it. They let, you know, perfect be the enemy of the good.
That's
the saying, right? Yeah. Sometimes you just, you know, you have to do it because it's a passion. You want to do it. And now your passion's going to shine through. All right. You're not going to be perfect. No one is, but you'll get better at your craft and you'll learn how to do it. I think that's great. I want to take a step back here too, because as far as lifestyle philosophies, I'm gonna get deep here with you, okay? Because as a parent, I'm sure we learn all the time that sometimes as parents we can be, you know, we're pushing our children to do things that we think are best for them, and you know, in our mind, you know, like my generation, it was my parents did not both go to college, but it was expected to me that I would, so I did. So of course my kids are both going to go to college. That was just from day one. Well, you know, you gotta be careful with how you plan out lives, because my oldest son, he's 19 now. He did go to college and hated it. Just did not have any use for it. His passion, and you'll probably appreciate this, is producing, writing music. He is prolific at it. He's a rapper. Okay. So you're going to have to, I can't recommend any of his songs just yet. But so what we did is, you know, we kind of, you know, we swallowed our parental pride and said, you know what, we're going to help you pursue what you love to do. We're not going to force you to go to a 4-year college and do whatever you want. So he's in a mentorship that he's producing music, and he's in a studio, and that's all he does. Downtime, he's writing music. When he's on the clock, he's writing music. When he's not writing music, he's thinking about music, because that's what he loves. And so we have no concerns about whether he's going to be happy, because he is happy. But he would have been miserable if we'd kept, you know, using our definition of success, which, you know, and his younger brother is going to have a totally different path, because he actually loves school, you know, good on him. Yeah. But that's not everybody's path is not the same.
Yeah.
And that's, I know as parents, and we can be pretty sometimes set in our own expectations and not our kids.
Yeah. You know, I have to agree. I mean, on both levels, I agree with you on the parent level, because I have the same challenge with my kids. And I also agree with you at the individual level, because as a child, I grew up with these same kind of challenges. You know, every parent has to come to their own understanding of this, but I can tell you what I've come to. I have become, first of all, let me tell you that when I was very young, my father took my musical instruments and mm-hmm. broke them.
Ow.
And destroyed them, like he, you know, smashed them. And he said, "You've got to go and get your education. Anybody can play a guitar. Don't be doing that." You know, so there I was. But if you come to my house today, John, yeah. I have about 8 guitars, like 3 pianos, including a grand piano. It's like ridiculous. My house is like a museum of
right.
musical instruments, right? And then, and my father destroyed my instruments so that I would go get an education. But what I found is that, and by the way, my father died in 87. And even after he died, I continued to do what he said I needed to do all the way to a PhD. My father was a PhD.
Right.
And he really wanted that for me. But I have to say, I was grateful that what I learned from him is not what he was teaching me. He told me to abandon music. But what I learned was create options.
Hmm.
Create options. Sure, one could call me a jack of all trades. I'm a musician. I'm a software programmer. I'm a teacher. I'm a marketer, online marketer. I have all kinds of stuff. Because I learned early on, my first degree was architecture. I have a degree in architecture.
That. I saw that.
How do you connect the dots from architecture to music to marketing to HR? I was a VP of Dale Carnegie Training. I've been all over the map. But what I learned very early on is it's not a bad idea to have these kids create options in their lives.
Hmm.
Because as opposed to stop doing this, just tell them, go ahead and do that. But I want you to also create options because we may not be 100% sure when we grow older that what we love now is what we'll love then. I've actually come to find out that I love music. I love music, but you know what? I'm not Bob Marley. I don't love it enough to not pay my mortgage.
Right, okay? Right.
And not everybody's going to get to be Bob Marley or Michael Jackson or Prince because there's a lottery involved in that. It's a little bit of luck.
Right.
So people like me find themselves a little bit in the middle in the sense that, yeah, I love music. But you know what? I also love having a roof over my head. And so I'm going to work hard to have options for that. Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State,
yeah.
Very few people know this, is a master pianist.
I didn't know that.
Sorry?
I did not know that.
Oh, my goodness. You should see her on the piano. She's a master at the musical instrument. And yet, It's not even on the radar. She was a Secretary of State. And there are many other people who've done great things, loved music, but didn't let music stop them from having options. And that's what I've learned. And that's what I'm trying to teach my kids. By the way, it's not easy to do.
No.
To teach these kids anything. And you know that as much as
man. I'm telling you. Well, and the other thing that you can't teach kids, which, you know, you've talked about your childhood and some of the things that you experienced. You know, we each have some hardships we overcome. You can't teach hunger. You can't teach them, you know, what it's like when you have, you know, had to really fight to get everything, or you've had to struggle. And that's one of the things that, you know, we worried about is we have a comfortable life. And are our children going to be challenged enough? Are they going to have the kind of struggles? Because I'm a, you know, big believer that every time you have a failure, that's like the best lesson you can have.
Absolutely.
And those are, you know, so many blessings come out of those that you don't want to create them for your kids, but you certainly don't want to remove them either. You know, let them fail. You have to.
Absolutely. I think you're right. It's almost impossible to teach that. You know, I'm grateful that, and I'm sure you have this situation too, and I hope anyone listening does, that you have a family structure, whether it's your spouse or it's family members somewhere else who can bring balance. Because, you know, I find that I'm kind of a tough parent. Like I always tell my kids stuff like, listen, when I was your age, I didn't have this, I didn't have that. So you better, you know.
Right.
But my wife she brings the balance. She brings the reason and the gentility back in to my, a little bit my tougher stance on life. So I think as long as we can have a parenting world or bubble that has different components that can bring balance, I think we're all going to be okay.
Yeah, my wife always says that I would eat our children if she wasn't around. So yeah, that's
you might be as bad as me then.
I mean, it's that, there's a reason why tigers eat their young. I'll just say that. I mean, it's, these guys punch buttons, but yeah, the act of parenting too is, again, I think it's so relevant to all the concepts you're thinking. I actually am sharing some of the material I found on your site with my kids, because I think it's so important, attitude above all else. In your own life, now that you're down in Austin and everything, when you look around, because I know that city is under, you know, has some tremendous struggles going on right now too. And it's a unbelievable city, by the way. But how do you, you know, what do you see there as far as, man, I could help with this? How could you help what's going on in Austin, for instance? Because Austin they're having a tough time right now.
Now, just to be clear, we're in the COVID season. I don't know when this will air, but we're still in COVID land, but you're talking actually about the rioting, right?
Right.
Yeah, you're talking about the sort of racial unrest.
There's a lot of unrest. Yes.
Yeah. I have actually kept my activism, if you will, to my music.
Yeah.
I don't hold strong opinions on social media at all. I don't talk about it. I don't talk about religion or politics or anything, but my music has actually been a way where I can say things. So, for example, I've written the last few months, I've written three songs that are socially conscious. One of them is called Love or Nothing. And if you look at the video, you'll see that time when a child went to an African-American child went to a white policeman and hugged him. And that picture went viral. In fact, unfortunately, that child has since died from being part of, him and his whole family, just went over a cliff somewhere. So it's just a tragic story. But I put that in the video. And then I also have that one time when a man in France climbed all the way up several stairs to go rescue a child. And he was an immigrant. He was an illegal immigrant, an African immigrant in France. But he did that heroic act of love. And so that song is all about, hey, listen, give me love, okay? Give me love or give me nothing at all. Don't sell me this. Don't sell me. Just give me love and I'll give you the same back, you know? So I have another one called We Are Love. And I have another one, called Give Us Freedom. All of these songs have, people rioting in the streets, in the video and all that stuff. But the message is about the higher point that we are all love and we are all humans first. I don't believe in racism. I believe in tribalism. Because tribalism is what we're doing. What we call racism, that's a small... You should see African people fighting African people. And you'll know that what you call racism up here in America, it's nothing. So everybody's capable of evil, whether you're white, black, red, whatever you want to call yourself. It doesn't matter what your color is. We are all human beings. And tribalism is the real problem. So I that's my perspective anyway.
Well, that's a great perspective. I think that, for somebody who grew up here and grew up in America, I don't think I would have made that association. But I think the way you described it is absolutely accurate. And start looking at it in those terms, I think it's a lot easier to try to understand another person because they're, in some different tribe rather than, we've got this line of race and it's an either or, everybody on one side or the other is.
It's all tribes. I mean, if you go to Africa, I remember going, visiting in Kenya in 1985 with my family. And I met someone who became my best friend at the time. He spoke just like I did. He's a white kid.
Yeah.
and you'd be shocked. His accent was just like my own. We're both from Africa, and this is how he talks. He's a white guy,
Yeah.
After a while, you wake up and you go, what is this whole thing about color anyway? We're the same. And that perspective is the human perspective versus the racial perspective. It's all tribal.
Man, that's well said. So you're the happiness guru. You're the doctor who can teach us how to be happy. Right now, a lot of people are still in their homes, or at least limiting where they can go. We're still under restrictions. You've got a lot of people who are still scared. I mean, rightfully so. There's so much that we still don't know about COVID that people are still trying to, you know, get back to some sort of normal life. How, you know, I've got employees, for instance, that are still remote, and they're still very hesitant to return to an office setting. And you could tell that being isolated or quarantined or confined has impacted their happiness. It's impacted their mental well-being. You know, do you have anything that you advise people who are, you know, I mean, they can't go out and do a lot of the things they love. How do you remain healthy in your mind and happy?
Yeah, no, that's what a great question. Let me just start by creating a distinction. John, by the way, you're a great interviewer. I'm just like loving your questions here. It's like, hey, let's talk some more.
Oh, good. I'm gonna cut that part out and I'm gonna keep repeating it. He said I was a great interviewer.
No, you are a great interviewer. I just feel so energized by your questions. But to answer your question, there is something that we need to create a distinction about, and that is what really is happiness. Hmm. You know, a lot of people look at happiness and they think it's something that they feel, something that they need to wait to feel. And actually, that definition will get us in trouble. Happiness is actually not a feeling. It's an action. Happiness is something we do intentionally.
Wow.
If you do happiness, you get better at doing happiness. Just like practicing any muscle, right? You get muscle memory about happiness because you're doing it.
So how do you do happiness?
Yeah, and I'll tell you in a second. But if you look at how I learned about happiness, I learned by singing of my mother.
Okay.
She was doing happiness to me.
Okay.
Okay. So what we have to do is develop new habits, right, that help us do happiness. And when we do happiness, we are happy, right? I have a song on my website called I Got Happy. I never say I am happy because that implies something that, you know, I'm feeling or whatever. I say, I got it. I've done it and it's mine. So the way you do happiness is I have an acronym called HAPPY. It's a daily practice. It's something you do every single day. So you build up the mental muscles for it, just like any other practice. It's all about how the mind holds on to something and won't let go if the neural circuits are very well wired.
Okay.
The first thing you have to do every day, first of five things, the first thing you have to do every day is be heedful. Heedfulness is another word for mindfulness.
Okay.
However you're going to do it, just do it. Spend 10 minutes inside your own mind and be heedful of what your mind is saying. Now, some people do it by meditating. Other people like me, I do it by walking around my neighborhood with music or with, you know, nothing, just whatever. You just find a way to be in your mind for 10 minutes so that you can create a positive environment.
All right. We're going to be heedful.
Number two, appreciation. We've already talked you know, gratitude. Appreciate, you know, and by the way, this model, HAPPY, I just made it HAPPY. It actually happens to be taken from the science, the literature around positive psychology.
Okay.
So this is not stuff I made up, but this is stuff I've arranged so that people can remember it. Okay. So appreciation is the second thing that the science tells us we've got to do. If you show gratitude for your life, for the people around you, for how you things are working out, it turns out you'll be a happier person just by showing gratitude. So like if you're feeling bad about something, stop the feeling in its tracks and just think of gratitude and everything starts to shift. The third letter is P. And what P stands for is people. Okay?
Okay.
There's research that shows that our happiness does not come from our possessions or the things that we acquire. It comes from the relationships we build with people. 90% of happiness comes from relationships, only 10% from the things we own. So if you're waiting to get that Lamborghini or that big house on the hill before you feel happy, I'm sorry, not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
You need to get the relationships in your life, the people you surround yourself with. That's where happiness lives. Then the second P is called practice. You have to practice these things because, as I said earlier, happiness is a muscle that we develop. It's an action that we take and we get better. I've learned how to be happy. I can turn my happy on, boom, just like that, because I've done it so many times. It's part of me. It's like writing a song. I can write a song now. I know how to do it. So practice being happy by doing happiness, as we've been discussing, and it will become who you are. And then the why is practicing is optimism. Learn to say yes. There's a lot of research and science that says there are two camps of people. People who are optimistic mm-hmm. and people who are not, naturally. And it's all in the way your brain is wired. I, for example, I am not an optimist, believe it or not, even though I may pretend to be one right now. Yeah. I'm not a natural optimist. But luckily, the research also shows that optimism is a learned skill because it's the opposite of helplessness, right?
Right.
Learned helplessness is what you want to move away from.
Wow.
And you want to move toward learned optimism. And the way you do that, again, is use some of these things like heedfulness and appreciation and people and all those practices. That's how you learn to say yes to yourself and to your circumstances. So if there's ever a situation where you find yourself feeling bad, being negative and pessimistic, just stop. Tell yourself a new story that creates a better picture that says yes for your life.
That,
and you'll find yourself being happy every day.
I love that. Yeah. You know, and overall, the concept that I love about this is it's within us. It's incumbent upon us. It's not somebody else or something else needs to make me happy. I have to be mindful of it. And basically, it's up to me. I can choose to be miserable or I can choose to be happy.
If it's going to be, it's up to me.
If it's going to be, it's up to me. That's right. So if right now we have... There's a lot of victimization. There's a lot of people looking to be offended now. I think a lot of it, we're just at one of those unbelievable times in history where so many things are just collapsing on us all at once that people are just maybe not thinking as rationally as they should. But if each would just take it upon ourselves to realize that we are responsible for our own happiness and quit looking to others, because as people, we're going to disappoint other people. That's our game. We do that. You got to be true to yourself, man. That's a good way. Happy. All right. I love that. So how are you and your family doing during this COVID shutdown? Well, or I guess it's a semi shutdown.
Yeah, no, we're doing okay. I mean, we're struggling, I think, like most parents with this new thing called being with your kids every day. Like, okay, it's actually a new thing. Huh, interesting. Because, they're going to school, well, for many people, they're going to school right in the same room as I'm working at home and they're going to school. And I'm learning new things about parenting and being there and being present for them. It's not as easy as it sounds. So, but we're doing that and we're trying to get outside more to go take walks or ride our bikes in a socially distanced, safe way, of course. But it's affecting us psychologically. I have to be very honest with you that there are days I just look at my kids and I'm going, how do they handle not ever playing with their friends?
I know.
Quite the old way. So I hope there's no longer term damage happening to all of our children. I've always worked from home or for a long time. So for me, a lot of people would say, well, this is a new reality. I'm like, I've always worked from home.
Right.
I'm
right. Okay with
it. But I don't know about the kids. So that's where we're at.
That's our concern too, is and I think that we're fortunate that our youngest, who still is in high school, he's going to school every day. Now they have all the precautions with the plexiglass and the masks. So it's still a real futuristic looking scene, but at least they see other kids and they're interacting. And I mean, for us last spring when it was a shutdown, that was not fun. Because what are they you find out how much schoolwork they can accomplish in a very short time, and then you've got six more hours in the day. It's like, oh my God, what are we gonna do with your kids? So Dr. Pelle, if people want to find out more about the things that you do and some of the philosophies that you share, how do they go about getting in touch with you?
Main thing is to go to my website, and that is drpelle.com, drpelle.com. And right there, when you get there, I have two words, profitable happiness. and underneath that, I have a free download of a profitable happiness checklist that anyone can use to sort of start asking themselves questions about why and where and how, and, you know, turning yourself into someone who can create the business of your dreams. And my specialty, of course, is LinkedIn. So it's all there, drpalais.com.
And I'm also a subscriber to your YouTube channel. So I know it's so funny because you've got things ranging from like software tips to some of your happiness tips. I mean, you've got a wide range of topics that kind of cracked me up. I was like, wait a minute. Does this thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, part of that is I'm doing an experiment. My YouTube channel is extremely new.
Yeah.
It's only a month old, and I'm going through a process of trying to figure out exactly what does my audience want. By the way, I love YouTube because you don't have to guess. You put out the wrong video, you'll see the results.
Right. Right.
People will tell you that. So I'm still learning kind of what my topic is on YouTube. And I'm beginning to learn that it's really just LinkedIn marketing and helping people go from their passion to their profit using LinkedIn.
Well, I'm going to...
But I'm always going to share my music, even if only two people watch it.
That's great. I mean, the music is for you as much as it is for other people. So if that's where you're happy. I mean, it's like I've been writing for 12 years. I write... That's what prompted me to finally do this podcast. And I don't know how many people read what I write. I even have to remind my wife to read my blog. But you know what? I'm doing it for me more than I'm doing it for anything else. So
that's true.
But I'm going to include links to, you know, your LinkedIn profile, your YouTube channel, and of course your website in the liner notes. I hope at some point we're only 3 hours by car separated. So my brother lives in Austin. Next time I'm down that way, we'll have to make a live meeting at some point. I'd love to share.
Absolutely, John. We got to do a post-COVID coffee.
Oh, man, that would be great. Post-COVID coffee. We could celebrate by burning our masks together or something. All right, my friend. Thank you so much for joining. And I hope this isn't the last time we talk. You be well.
It will not be. And I really appreciate you so much. Thank you, sir.
All right, buddy. You too.
All right. Thank you.